The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, a Tampa tradition for 61 years, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. GM Sean Sullivan is giving you $150 just for ordering a vehicle with no deposit, and you can still get the Ira Kaufman discount. Reach out to Sean at BillCurryFord.com. Bill Curry Ford, home of the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. Bill Curry Ford.
For anybody that was eligible of the female persuasion in New York City in 79, I was interested. This is the Ira Kaufman Podcast. This is not the Jason Light Podcast. Nobody called me the Sage back then. In round two, the Tampa Bay Bucks select. I had it going. I had it going in 1979. Not much before and not much since. But 79, I was rolling. Not like some of these other clowns who throw seven or eight names out there and then if one of them hits, said, as I predicted.
You know, after you go to the refrigerator, because that's always your first stop, sometimes you go give Cosmo a biscuit and you go under the sink. There's a leak. You got mold all of a sudden. You didn't even know what was going on for the last week. Who do you call?
You call Florida's Elite Restoration. Speaking of that, I had an inspection because I renewed my homeowner's insurance and it was a different company. And they sent out an inspector. First thing I see, the guy, he's got his head underneath my pipes, underneath the sink over there. He's checking for mold. That's the first thing they're checking for. And if you think there's any chance you might have an issue with mold, you got to call Florida's Elite Restoration. It's got to be your first phone call.
Business owners like plumbers, air conditioning companies, property managers, you've got all kinds of clients that have disasters in their home, fire, wind, flood, mold. You need a company you can count on to take care of them. And that's Florida's Elite Restoration owner, Josh Martin, 14 years as an insurance adjuster. Now he's on the other side, helping businesses like yours. Reach out to Josh, floridaselite restoration.com, and he'll come and show you how Florida's Elite Restoration is honest and takes care of great companies like yours, as well as consumers. They're there 24/7, free assessments in people's home, inspections. And yeah, Ira, mold is a huge deal, but I think that guy might have been looking for you. He took a one look at you, Ira, and he thought maybe this guy's got some chips under here that I can.
He found an old fajita under there, but no mold.
All right, floridaselite restoration.com. Buccaneers fans, the draft countdown is on, and the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports, his picks are in. The Sage's picks are in, at least for right now. We'll be talking a lot of draft on this episode. This is the Ira Kaufman Podcast. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper is here. And the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, Ira Kaufman, Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame voter, the King of Newport Richey, is with us. It's all the fun presented by Bill Curry Ford. We also thank Big Storm Beer, the official beer of the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Big Storm Beer, get a Bromosa, an Arcus Pale Ale, Wavemaker Amber Ale, a Bay Beer. You can find them at Publix. You can also find them at the Big Storm Tap Rooms in Odessa, Clearwater, 49th Street, just south of Almerton Road, and in Cape Coral, as well as Orlando at the Amway Center. Big Storm Beer, Florida's best craft beer. Check them out. Follow them on Facebook as well. They got live music. Big Storm Brewery. com. And Ira, Florida's Elite Restoration, we love them. That's your first phone call or your first trip on the internet, floridaselite restoration.com. Anytime you have any sort of disaster in your home, storm damage, wind damage, mold, flood, floods are killers, Ira, floridaselite restoration.com. Sage, tell us about your first NFL draft. Before we get into this, what's your first memory of covering an NFL draft? When you had a bullhorn and you were on horseback, and how did that go?
No, I had the absolute classic first NFL draft coverage. I believe it was 1979, probably at the Marriott Marquis in New York, where it used to be on like 49th Street, covering for United Press International. And although the name escapes me, Isbitz, and you might know it, what I remember most is, all right, up next, the New York Jets. First round pick, boo, boo. I don't even remember who it was, but all I remember was Jet fans, who are an ornery sort to begin with, just absolutely blasting the pick. And I believe that was the same year the Giants drafted Phil Sims. A little bit of a surprise pick out of a small college. Forgot who the Jets drafted, but I can still remember the booze cascading. Steve, it doesn't matter who the Jets draft. The booze are going to follow very, very quickly. That's part of being a Jet fan, Steve.
Well, I just looked it up. Actually, that was Marty Lyons who they drafted, and I believe he's in the Jets Ring of Honor. So it just goes to show that Jets fans don't know anything, and hopefully that holds.
Right.
Hopefully that holds That's true, right. Because they think Todd Bowles sucks. So hopefully they're continue to be wrong. Did you have a young lady to meet after the draft, 1979? Who knows what you were doing?
79 was the most momentous year in Sage's history. I turned 25. That summer, I went to Tampa for spring training that March, and then I was switched to the Giants that summer. Ray Perkins, Phil Sims covered the Giants. And then, last but not least, on December 13th, a rainy night, New York City, a bar on 2nd Avenue called Suspenders. Oh, yeah, Suspenders, Lee, Suspenders. And that is where I walk in and meet my future bride. And all these years later, we're still together. 1979, a big year for the Sage, Lee. What the hell were you doing in 79?
Well, what was the name of the male troupe, male dance troupe at Suspenders?
The Jordanaires, the Jordanaires.
Ira, I like how you artfully dodged the question, which was simply, did you have a young lady to meet in April of 1979? You dodged the question, so I understand it's a sensitive topic.
Wait a minute. Let me go back to that question. I would say the odds were good that that was a yes, because that was the year that I developed my social skills, Isbits, and it was Katie Bar the Door for anybody that was eligible of the female persuasion in New York City in 79. I was interested.
Ira, you said that spring they sent you to spring training in Tampa. So you covered the Reds at the time?
I did. And
you got to have some stories about Pete Rose.
Well, I got a quick story. The sports editor was Milton Richman. There was another guy who came down for the first 2 weeks of spring training. I came down the second 2 weeks. Milton Richman was with me the first week. He's a legendary baseball columnist. He's in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And I was traveling with them, and, day two, we go over to the Reds. 79 Reds, still very good. Tom Seaver was on that team. So, Steve, we walk in, and Richmond says, hey, Ira, I want you to do a column on Tom Seaver today. Yeah, here I am, 24 years old, trying to work my way up to United Press International. So Richmond asked the clubhouse guy, hey, where's Seaver? All these pitchers are out shagging balls. The guy goes, I think he's in the clubhouse. We walk in. Lee, he's the only guy in the clubhouse. The only guy. He's doing the New York Times crossword puzzle. How many baseball players are doing that, the Kemper? Richmond walks in. Big, hey, Tom, how you doing? Hey, Mill, great to see you. What's going on? Well, Tom, we got this kid, Ira Kaufman. Nobody called me the Sage back then. His bitch, he wants to ask you a few questions. I'm going to be outside. I got to talk to another guy. I'll be back in about 15 minutes. I walk out. Richmond walks out. I ask the first three questions to Kemper. I get one-word answers. And he never looked up from his puzzle.
He was a surly guy, wasn't he?
Never looked up. After about 4 minutes, I'm in a lot of trouble. I'm almost out of questions. I've made no connection with the great Tom Seaver. I should have told him I'm from Brooklyn. The guy played for the Mets. But finally, Steve, my sixth question, whatever it was, he looked up, gave me a decent answer. It went a lot better after that. I got enough for a story. Decent story, decent feature. Richmond comes back in 10 minutes later. He goes right up to Seaver, right in front of me, gentlemen. How'd the kid do? How'd the kid do? And Seaver gave an answer. I can just see Isbits laughing. I can just see it. Seaver looked at Richmond, and I was looking at Seaver, and said, he's not bad, but he's got a tendency to answer his own questions. He's not bad.
Ooh. Ooh. All right, Ira.
So, Tyber, real quick, was Al Michaels still the play-by-play man for the Reds, or did he leave by that time?
He left by that time.
Okay.
And Steve, I still have that problem, as bits in the buck clock room. Still got that problem.
All right, Ira, look, I'm going to throw you a fastball here. Who do you like for the Bucks in the first round? Fans are all over the draft by this point. Even the legions of people who don't care too much about the draft and just want to get it over with, they're dialed in. What is the Sage doing as we sit here today? What is the Sage's target in the first round? Is the Sage looking to maybe move up and strike for somebody? Is he looking to get into the second round and move back, maybe save some cap room by getting out of the first round, collecting some ammunition to maneuver better in the second round? What is the Sage doing?
Steve, today is your fortunate day, Steve. Not only do I have a first-round pick at 27, but I'm going to offer later on two other picks, a total of three picks, the first three guys the Bucks would pluck off that board. The first guy is a cornerback out of Washington. I'm all about defense.
Ooh.
I'm all about defense. The guy's name is Kyler Gordon. He's very disciplined. He's got decent size. He's a man corner. Kevin Ross is going to like this guy. He's going to push for him for Todd Bowles. I'm just not satisfied with the Bucks' posse of cornerbacks behind Carlton Davis. I'm not satisfied, Lee. And when the pass rush doesn't get there, they get exposed. And I think they need another guy. Lee, you can never have too many. Doesn't mean they're going to have as many injuries at that position as they had last fall. But, Lee, I'm going with Kyler Gordon, who helps out on the run.
Well, my first question is, are you getting feedback from someone in the Bucks organization that they might be looking at him a little more seriously than others?
This is the Ira Kaufman podcast. This is not the Jason Light podcast.
Okay, all right.
This is my pick, and I believe when Light hears this podcast, Gordon's going to skyrocket up that board.
Well, my second question, I've written about him already, so you did some research there. That's good sleuthing. My second question is, you know what his biggest claim to fame is outside of football?
Did I have anything to do with Metallica?
No. But it might, for his sake, he'd been better off if that was the case. But
what is it?
He was a WNBA dancer.
Can I scratch him from my list now?
No, Ira. I thought you were an enlightened human being.
I thought
you were of a tolerant sort.
A WNBA, not even an NBA dancer? A WNBA dancer?
WNBA dancer.
That promotes footwork, Steve. Better footwork. I'm sticking with Kyler Gordon. How do you like that, Isbit?
Just to clarify, he was 9 years old when his WNBA fame took hold. So maybe that makes you feel a little differently. Sage, do you think he's the kind of guy who could start? I mean, are they going to give somebody, a cornerback like him coming in, full throttle opportunity to win a job from whoever he may win a job from? He's definitely a guy who can play inside or outside. But do you think they give him a chance to win the gig?
I think it's going to be hard, regardless of position. I know you guys have been trying to talk me into some guard beating out Aaron Stinney at left guard. I think that's going to be hard, too. For a rookie to crack this lineup, no matter where it is, very difficultly. Doesn't mean he can't play immediate impact on special teams. He's going to make the roster. He's going to make everybody around him better. He's going to push Bunting. He's going to push Dean. But to say that he starts opposite Carlton Davis, I'm not willing to go there, Lee. Why don't you give your first-round pick, Lee?
Technically, I have three. I'll just throw the third one out there real quick, and I won't go into detail, and I'll go into my first pick. The guy I would love the Bucks to have, they'd have to trade up to get him, and I've been on this guy's bandwagon for 2 years now, is Chris Olave, wide receiver from Ohio State. He is fabulous. Now, I got to be fair, and a lot of people will come after me for saying this, but I'll be honest. I don't watch a lot of SEC games. So these SEC receivers, they're very foreign to me. I can't say yay or nay about any of them. Not saying they're bad, not saying they're good. I just don't know anything about them. I haven't seen them. I don't watch a lot of SEC games outside of the bowl season. I just don't. Olave, this guy, he was so freaking good. I won't go into detail about Olave, but I sort of agree with what Steve has said in the past that if you want to try to keep Tom Brady, you give him as many toys as possible. But if I was picking, if I was Jason Light, if I had the opportunity, the guy I would pick, and I were you and I, you, this may shock you, we're sort of on the same wavelength here. I would pick Andrew Booth, cornerback from Clemson. This son of a gun, not only is he a good cornerback, this son of a gun tackles. He tackles. You go look at his YouTube highlights. This guy makes so many open field tackles, it's unreal. He tackles. And I love that. I love that. And I think Todd Bowles like that. But I will go further. I'm like you, Ira. There's something about the Bucs cornerbacks. Yeah, they won the Super Bowl. Yeah, they shut down in order Breeze, Aaron Rodgers, Mahomes. They shut those guys down. They played well. But something about these corners or this cornerback unit, maybe it was zero depth. And that very well could be, given the fact that the bottle of cologne, Pierre Desire, is still looking for work. Whenever the Bucs had an injury last season at cornerback, this defense took a couple steps back. There was no denying it. Now, statistically, the defense was still good. But eyeballing the defense, when they lost a corner, this defense changed. And it didn't change for the better. Thirdly, I don't think that the Bucs are going to be able to keep both Sean Murphy Bunting and Jamal Dean for next year, meaning 2023. And both these guys are in the last year of their contract. Especially they keep Tom Brady. They keep Tom Brady, it's going to cost him dollar-wise, salary cap-wise. So I don't think they're going to be able to keep both those guys on the roster, which means you're going to have an opening, which means, as I stated earlier, their depth sucked at cornerback. And that's where I think Booth would step right in and start. He'll be on a rookie contract. They'll be able to afford to keep one of either Dean or Bunting to go along and play with Booth, to play with Carlton Davis. So, Ira, you and I are pretty much on the same wavelength there.
Steve, we're both focused on cornerback. Are we wrong, Steve?
Well, of course, there's no right or wrong here, Ira. Absolutely not. Yeah, there's a lot of ways to look at it. And it's the draft. Don't screw it up. As Bruce Allen famously told you, don't F it up when you had your Hall of Fame presentation. I will say this about the cornerbacks situation. I believe Dean and Murphy Bunting are each making about $3 million this year in the last year of their rookie contract. And I'm not sure that either one is going to be worth a lot of money on the open market. I don't know. And what do you think, Ira? I don't think any of them would be considered a number one corner. Number two corners don't make a ton of money. I mean, they might be potentially a $6 or $7 million guy, but I don't know how difficult they'll be to keep. Somebody would really have to stay healthy and have one hell of a season. You know, all it takes is one, but I don't know. I don't know where the Bucks think as far as what their market value is. You know, Jason Light and his team is always trying to figure out future market value of these guys. So that's something at least to think about. Hey, a great corner would be happy to have. Gordon, Ira, has often been, I've seen him a couple of places compared to Sean Murphy Bunting, maybe a little harder hitter. I wanted to ask you before I gave you my pick, Ira, does this mean anything to you? Richard Sherman was on his podcast and I was taking a listen, and he, for the PFF tribe, he had been studying film on all of the cornerbacks in the draft. His pick was Roger McCreary out of Auburn. Said the guy is, quote, the steal of the draft. And he was talking about how the measurables are knocking this guy into the second round. And he said the film says, look, the stuff that they're saying versus the film, he called it archaic. And he just raved about how the guy is so sticky in man coverage. And Sherman likes it. Yeah, he made a couple of bad plays, but I'm looking at how the guy bounced back. That's what you need in the NFL, because you're going to get burned. You're going to, right. And this was the guy I liked the most. So my question to you is, does Richard Sherman's take on cornerbacks, does that mean anything to you? Does it mean anything to you when Rondé Barber evaluates corners, keeping in mind that he once called Vernon Hargraves one of the all-time greats in the lexicon of Bucks cornerbacks, to quote him?
Everybody makes a mistake, Steve. Everybody makes a mistake. I'm sure Rondé would like that one back. But Steve, to answer your question, of course it matters what Richard Sherman thinks about guys that played his position. Sherman's one of the more cerebral cornerbacks we've ever seen.
Yeah, Brady, he's very smart.
You know, arguable Hall of Famer. Wouldn't shock anybody if he ends up with a Buston Canton. Really studies the game. So, you know, he said McCreary's the steal and probably thinks he's going to be available in the second round, whereas Lee, your guy from Clemson and Gordon might be off the board. Lee, one more thing that I think tilts it a little bit more towards cornerback, no matter which one they pick. I'm looking at the Bucs' schedule. We know the teams they're playing. Lee, the Cowboys, the Rams, the Chiefs, the Packers, the Bengals. Lee, those are high-powered offenses, Lee. I don't care who Aaron Rodgers is throwing to. That team's going to score points.
Yeah, the Bucs have a tough schedule, and whenever you have a tough schedule, you're going to be facing top-shelf quarterbacks. That's all there is to it. A good team has a good quarterback. The Titans, well, they're a good team, but guess what? They don't have a good quarterback, and they got bounced in the first round by a team altogether now who had a good quarterback.
Steve, they're playing the Bengals. They're going to they spread you out and make you cover three or four strong targets. I mean, you better be ready.
Ira, do you think Jason Light allows Todd Bowles to pick the cornerback? In the sense that if they decide, hey, there's three guys here we like, obviously everybody's different, but do you think he gives Bowles that kind of power when it comes to a final decision? If they said, hey, there's three guys that we like in the bottom of the first round, and this is how our scouts rank them, Todd, what do you think?
My answer is yes. Now, if you're talking about a guard or a running back, no, because admittedly, Lee, and we've said this, and then Bowles said it, he's way behind in terms of looking at offensive players' prospects. He's way behind because it was the last thing on his mind until he got that phone call from Bruce Arians, which wasn't that long ago. But, Lee, if three guys are tight at cornerback and Bowles, you know, and Kevin Ross get in a room and hash it out and come up with a consensus between the two of them, they take it to Jason Light. Lee, if I'm Light, I'm leaning towards giving Bowles what he wants in that case.
How could you not? He's the head coach. He's a defensive guy. He's still going to be running the defense. So how could you not, you know, let him tip the scales?
Well, Sage, as hinted at previously, I like the offensive line pick. I would go there. I would go with, and it looks like starting to look even more and more like he'll be there. Zion Johnson from Boston College, the guard, who also played a little center at the Senior Bowl. And he's a beast. I mentioned that I probably didn't mention on the podcast, but listened to a couple of interviews from him. It sounds like he's studio ready. He's got all the answers. Brilliant guy. And I was talking to an executive at the owner's meetings about him. And he said, look, this is the classic Bill Belichick guy. There are other teams that do this as well, that they are sitting because they're good. They're sitting at 28, 29, 30. And what do? They draft an offensive lineman who is a 10-year starter who's just a stud. And they do it over and over again because an O-lineman is usually not the guy you have to take. Oh, gosh, we're in the top 10. We got to take this guy because he's could be an elite, super elite talent. He said it's a classic pick. It would be a classic Jason Light pick, this guy said. And you know, you can't go wrong. I'll take the guy. I think he would blow out Aaron Stinney in a heartbeat. That's where I'm going. And like I said, he could be a center, 6'3", 316. And everybody seems to think he's a can't miss. I could go for can't miss.
His versatility is very attractive. I think that helped elevate Hainsey's status within the Buck organization.
Oh, sure.
So, look, it's great to be able to move those pieces around, Lee, depending on injuries and what your needs are at a particular time. This guy's a beast. You know, he's got the size and strength and the athleticism to play various positions. I'm sticking with my Aaron Stinney as the starter at left guard, Lee. I just think I don't think they got a lot of qualms about him. It's going to take a heck of a rookie to beat him out, Lee. That's my opinion.
I agree with you about Stinney. However, the thing that I can't get past, and maybe he just has a hell of a smart agent, I just can't get past, if they have so much faith in Stinney, why did they sign him to a multi-year contract? They signed him to a one-year contract. And that tells me one or two things. Either they're not fully sold on Stinney, or Stinney's agent is smart, knows he'll play well, and after 1 year, he can go on the free agent market and clean up.
Ira, the other thing that I think is worth noting here is that we did a poll on JoeBucksFan.com, and it came up 50% of the fans want to see the Bucks go defensive tackle in the first round. That's what it came up, 50%. Obviously, the question mark is lingering there with Ndamukong Suh. If Suh were back, I think that number might come down to 33%. But it's a huge desire out there for Bucks fans, in part because there's a lot of strong defensive tackle prospects in this draft. And I think sometimes when you have a strong draft like that, you can get a little caught, because if there's a lot of depth, you know, what people might say value in the third round, fourth round, whatever, if you can get a second round talent in the third round, the guy's still a second round talent. Value doesn't necessarily win you games. It may be smart and it may help you, but in the first round, I really like this guy, Travis Jones, out of Connecticut. Lee wrote about him. He's just a gigantic human being and very disruptive. And at 6'5", 333, yes, he played for Connecticut. Yes, he hasn't been tested in the same way. But I really like the way the Bucks are able to coach up in the trenches far better than they had in previous years. And, you know, what a wonderful situation it would be to put a beast like that out there. And Vita Vea, you know, I don't like saying it, but I don't mind saying it, but a lot of fans don't want to hear it. Until he shows otherwise, he only plays part-time, and he has had injury issues. He's fought through many of them, but he has been injured a lot. I don't mind going for the big freakish body here.
My very first question, the next time I get a chance to stand in front of Todd Bowles, I'm going to ask him what Steve's been harping on for about a year now. I think Steve loses sleep at night, wanting to know why Vita Vea doesn't play 60 snaps a game. I have a good idea, but I want to hear that from Todd Bowles. So the next time I get to stand in front of Todd Bowles, I promise you guys, that is the very first question I'm going to ask. Steve doesn't give a damn about what inflation is going to be next week. He doesn't give a damn about who's going to be governor in a couple of years. He doesn't give a damn who's going to be president in 3 years. He wants to know why freaking Vita Vea doesn't play 60 snaps a game. And I'm going to answer that freaking question the very first time Todd Bowles is available at a media availability. Take it upon myself to make sure this mystery question of the century is answered.
And Lee, you preface it by saying this is coming directly from Steve Isbitz, right? From
no,
Steve
I
Isbitz.
Won't do that.
Well, wait a minute,
wait,
guys. Wait a minute, I have to break the bad news. The bad news is I won't believe anything that Bowles says or Jason Light on this subject. So that's why I haven't even asked, because I would not trust the answer out of the gate. Unless they really have some unique, crazy answer, I wouldn't believe it at all. They're just not going to give a straight answer on that. I don't know if there is a straight answer that would reflect well on the situation. There are no big, giant nose tackles across the league who play 80, 90, 100% of the snaps, not Vita.
I'll lay money what the answer is.
I think the answer could be very simply in terms of this. Analytically, breaking down film, maybe some games early in his career that he played 70 to 75% of the snaps, they charted that that his effectiveness diminished at that point after a certain number of snaps. And it may not be anything more than that.
By the way, I'm watching the NFL Network, and they got a big thing here about Roger McCrary, and they're actually interviewing him. So I got to go back to this. Since Sherman loves him so much. With the computer chips that the Bucks wear, it's not just next-gen stats, but it's like astronauts. They know everything medically about these guys. I'm going to guess, very much like Florida State did when they first came up with this software from NASA back in 2013, they can tell when a guy's play drops off because of snaps before they themselves know. And I'll lay money that's the reason that these medical sensors they have, Vita Vea goes over a certain threshold of snaps, his play drops off.
Nothing more mysterious than that, Steve.
Money on it. That's the only thing that makes sense. Why wouldn't you play a guy like that more snaps? Because think about it. These coaches, if they don't get the most out of their players and the most out of the team, they get fired. I trust these assistants that Bruce Arians and Todd Bowles have. They've got the street cred. And I can't believe that they wouldn't play Vea for no good reason.
As much, Steve, as it hurts for me to fully endorse something that DeKemper says, I'm with him on this, Stevie.
But I'm just guessing.
Biggest game of the year, season on the line. He played 34 snaps against the Rams, less than half. That's just facts are facts. And I'm not convinced that it's because of a computer chip. And, you know, those things are supposed to be a guide. They're not supposed to be, you know, the guys aren't robots out there. But anyway, Sage, who's your next guy? What are you looking at? You said you had another guy.
All right. I got another two guys, but I'm all about defense here. I'm all about defense.
Now, is this a first round situation? What are we looking at?
No. After taking Kyler Gordon, this is who you take in round two. You take Boye Mafe. That's who you take. That's what you do. Minnesota, edge rusher. He sounds a little bit like Joe Tryon. He's a little bit raw, not very savvy on some running plays. He can be caught inside, then they work outside against him. But he was a terror in the Senior Bowl, Lee, a terror. He jumped up the charts, not enough probably to get into the first round, but could be sitting there for the Bucs, maybe middle of the second round. Bucs try to move up, grab him, maybe with the 43rd pick instead of waiting. And edge rusher, very exciting player, 257 pounds. Lee runs a 4.5. And that big Senior Bowl, I think, got the attention of the Bucs. It's done that in the past with other guys. And Lee, I'm all about defense. And Shaq Barrett goes down, your pass rush fizzles, absolutely fizzles. If he's out 5 or 6 weeks, even if he's in there, I'm still looking for that other edge rusher. Tryon might be the guy. He might not be. You can't have enough pass rushers, Lee. I'm going with this guy from Minnesota.
I wouldn't do that. But what I mean by that is that's not my second player. My second player is a first-round kind of guy. But I love that attitude, Ira. You can't have enough pass rushers, and you're correct. And to buttress one of your premises, Jason Light has a history of picking guys on the second day of the draft who blow up at the Senior Bowl. He's got a history of doing that. So you put some good thought into this. You really did, Ira. Should I go with my second guy or not?
Yes.
This really hacks off a lot of Bucs fans. But it's a point that Steve has made, and I think it's a more than valid point. And let's be honest. In the NFL, you win in 2022. You win games by scoring points. One way to keep Tom Brady is to give him more toys. Unfortunately, we don't know what's going to happen with Chris Godwin. We certainly hope he's going to be back 100% at some point this season. We don't know when that is, but I'm a big believer, and you can't have enough wide receivers in the current stage of the NFL. I love Johan Dotson of Penn State. If you listen to people outside the Bucs organization say the one thing that the Bucs need, and once in a while you've heard Bowles say this, is speed. This team lacks speed. Johan Dotson is a speedster. He's a little bit short, but he has, if you listen to Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network, former NFL scout with Baltimore, and Ozzie Newsome knew what the hell he was doing with building an organization, but scouts. Daniel Jeremiah says this guy has the best hands in the NFL or in the draft. His tape from Penn State, the guy is always open, sometimes wide open. He's got great hands. He's not afraid to muscle up with cornerbacks from Ohio State. Ohio State's pretty damn good. This guy is fabulous. And oh, by the way, he's a punt returner. And I'm sorry, Jason Light. I'm sorry, Bruce Arians. Jalen Darden sucks. There was no good reason to have this guy in the field. At number 27, I could easily see the Bucs going after Johan Dotson.
All right, Sage, I'm going to follow you to the second round. So I'll follow you to the second round. And I'm glad Lee clarified, you know, Dotson's definitely going to be a late first round, early second round guy for sure. He's not going to be available in that number two pick. And of course the Bucs may make some trades and, you know, we may see some, who knows what we'll see. I mean, whoever thought the Saints would end up with a second first round draft pick the way they did, Ira. I'm going to go in the feed Brady theme and in the offensive football theme, I'm going to go with Trey McBride out of Colorado State, the tight end.
Nice.
I think there's a pretty good chance that he'll be there late in the second round. I did get to see Anthony Becht at the combine. I know we all did, and I saw him another time. And you know, he babysits the tight ends there for the NFL, meaning he's their mentor for the week that they're there. We talked a little tight ends, and but this guy is 6'3", 250 Ira, considered to be a guy who's going to be a good number two tight end in the league. And, you know, hey, they all have the potential to be a number one. But he can catch, he can block, he's versatile, he'll probably get bigger. And I know he's not going to be an instant impact guy, but if he can block and they can coach him up well, I lean toward him a little bit in the sense that he's from Colorado State and he's from Fort Morgan, Colorado. And Jason Light is a rural Colorado guy in the same kind of neighborhood. I think he has a respect for the players out there, and I could see him saying, hey, this is a blue-collar, talented guy that we you know, we could get some mileage out of. And there's been a lot of tight ends lately, you know, out of the first round who've been successful, you know, catching a hell of a lot of passes. So that might be an option.
Very sharp, Stevie. Very sharp. Look, he's not going to block like Gronkowski. Who does?
Yeah.
But let's face it, Lee, most tight ends today, they're glorified wide receivers. That's what they are. A little
you
bigger.
You could say that about Cam Brake, couldn't you?
Yeah, this guy's got speed that Brake doesn't have. He can get downfield. He put up some big, big numbers. Maybe not playing the greatest competition. Lee, I don't think there's a tight end that's going in the first round in this draft. That's just
the way
it is. Yeah.
Wow.
But McBride could be there. I think he's clearly the best pass-catching tight end, Steve, that's going to be available among these prospects. And I think it's a position of need, Steve. You know, it's well-documented what I've been saying about tight end. I expect Gronk back. You know, 90% sure he's coming back. There's always a chance he doesn't. But even if he does, Lee, he gets nicked up. He doesn't play 16 games, Lee. And there's not a lot of depth behind him. There's just not.
No.
Great's great. And I think there's a spot for McBride. So hats off, Isbitz. That's an excellent pick. I'm ready to move on to my next pick, Stevie.
All right. Well, they may have to trade up for him. I understand that. Maybe 10 spots, 8 spots, 6 spots, but something manageable. Yeah. And you're right, Ira. He did catch almost 100 balls last year. Hands are not an issue for that guy. And, you know, he's enticing to anybody. So what do you got now, next, Ira? What's next?
All right. Lee, I'm looking at Lavonte David, Lee. I'm looking at him. And I'm looking at him for a couple of reasons. He's going to be 33 in January, so 33 when 2023 starts. His base salary is $12 million, like $12 million. I don't believe he's under contract for next season, and I can see the Bucs doing a Bobby Wagner. I can see it, Lee. Seattle did it. You know, it's not like the Seahawks said Wagner can't play anymore, but we're moving on. We're going to get younger at the position. And, Lee, I don't see an heir apparent to Lavonte David. I don't see it.
No.
So I see a young man out of Oklahoma, 6'1", 228. He runs a 4.5. Lee, his name's Brian Asamoah. He gets in the backfield. He's a sideline-to-sideline guy. I don't think Todd Bowles minds using undersized linebackers. I really don't. And the Bucs have a long, long tradition of being undersized on defense, and they don't mind it at all. Now, they're not playing the same defense Monty Kiffin implemented, but I think the principles are the same, Lee. Fast to the ball, swarm to the ball. And this guy, Asamoah, I think fits the bill. I think he could be there in the third round. I don't see much depth beyond White and David and the inside linebacker spots. I don't see it, Steve.
The Bucs, of course, would say, hey, we drafted Grant Stewart last year in the 7th round. And, I forgot the guy they drafted in the 5th round.
K.J. Britt from Auburn.
Yeah, K.J. Britt from Auburn. But, no, they're not Lavonte David. And I understand what you're talking about here with maybe finding an heir apparent in the 3rd round and hopefully a guy who can hammer away at special teams.
That's right. And you can't tell me Kevin Minter is going to be the long-term answer.
He's not even on the roster, is he?
No. All right, Ira. Now, look, so you've got a cornerback and
edge rusher.
And now you're going with the linebacker, Ira. I sense a theme.
Well, speaking of a theme, about 15 minutes ago, I gave a full-throated support for your rant. And now I got a problem with you, DeKemper, which is what makes this podcast so lively and spunky. Lee, will you stop with the wide receivers, DeKemper? I mean, what is going on here? Do you have ye of little faith about Chris Godwin? I mean, to me, Chris Olave, you know, interesting prospect. But Lee, when Godwin's on the field and Russell Gage and Evans is in his prime, this guy's not going to contribute. I don't see it, Lee. Why do you got to cram more receivers with premium picks? I don't see it.
Have you heard of Tom Brady?
Yeah, I've heard of Tom Brady.
And you do watch NFL games, notice that offense rules the day, right?
I don't see a problem with his targets, Lee.
Well, I don't think Russell Gage I don't think his ceiling is the same as Olave, for example. And if you can't find a way to get Olave on the field, Byron Leftwich has no business being a head coach anywhere.
Lee, you're talking maybe about going four wide. I don't know if that's wise with a 45-year-old quarterback and not giving him ample protection. I just don't see wide receiver as a premium need, Lee. I don't see that.
It's not a premium need, but I'm thinking, number one, offense rules the day in the NFL. Number two, Tom Brady. Number three, Tom Brady. You want to try to keep Tom Brady after this year? You give him a reason to stick around. And we know he picked the Bucks. Why? Receivers. And allegedly, why is he going to go to Miami next year? Receivers. So you give him more toys to play with as an enticement. And, oh, by the way, if he leaves, then you've got some trade fodder, whether it be Gage, whether it be Olave, although I wouldn't do that because he's cheap and a rookie. I'm a big fan of Olave. Big fan. You know, they'd have to trade up to get him. So that's why I'm thinking Dotson. You know, and, oh, by the way, if you have a boatload of receivers, it's going to be easier to get a quarterback, number one. Number two, it's going to make it easier for Trask, Gabbert, or Ryan Griffith to come in and take Tom Brady's place, although I don't think anybody will be able to take Tom Brady's place.
I guess my only point, Lee, is if Godwin, Evans, and Gage are healthy, I don't see a lot of wiggle room for anybody else to make much of an impact. I don't see it.
You're assuming that Gage is this next great thing, and I'm not saying Dotson would be or Olave would be, but I think their ceilings are a whole lot higher than Gage.
I like Gage, Lee. I think he's going to be effective.
Yeah, I think the Bucks believe Gage is the next great big thing. That's why they gave him $10 million a year. And I think they're going to really, really push it with him. But I'm never against drafting a receiver, though. I'm going to throw something a little wacky out here, Ira. Wacky out at you. Two questions. One, if the Bucks do draft defense, like you just suggested, do you think in any way, shape, or form that's an acknowledgement that Tom Brady is not coming back for the 2023 season? And question number two is more of a statement. I think the guy poised to have a bounce back year next season, if you even want to call it fully a bounce back year, is Tyler Johnson. 23 years old, not everybody blossoms in their first or second year. He played every game last season, proved his durability, got hurt in the last game, but he played in every single game, caught 36 balls, and I think if Brady didn't have some confidence in him, that he wouldn't have tripled his receiving total and he wouldn't have played as much as he did. And I think he's somebody who's young enough and maybe learned a couple of lessons last year. And with Antonio Brown, you know, that freak show getting out of the team, I think there's an opportunity here for Johnson to maybe have a Russell Gage style breakthrough like Gage did after a couple of years.
You know, Lee, it's very interesting because picking at 27, suppose a guy like Olave slides, it's unlikely. It's unlikely.
Yeah, unlikely.
But Lee, if he does, you know, you got the old thing about taking the best player, regardless of position. That is never a bad philosophy, Lee. Never. You don't know who the hell's going to get hurt. You might have future trade dividends down the line with an incumbent at that position because you got this young guy who's really good. So, Lee, you take a lesser player, you know, at a more of a position of need, like corner maybe or guard. Lee, if Olave's that good, I can't argue against it. If he's the best player on your board, I don't think you can go wrong with that philosophy.
Well, I already had extolled the virtues of Olave, and Dotson, I think, is the same way. I also believe if you're a strict adherence to best player available, that's very dangerous. That's very dangerous. For example, would you pick a tackle? Now, I know there's some Donovan Smith haters out there like, absolutely you'd pick a tackle. I wouldn't. and I don't think Jason Light would either. And I always refer to the infamous Dan Marino draft. The Steelers, they had the immortal Bubby Brister. And I think it was Bubby Brister. I could be wrong. Could have been, who was the guy who was a sports anchor? Mark Malone. They could have been Mark Malone. And then he decided, nope, we'll go with best player available. We'll pick a defensive tackle. That did the Steelers in for a good decade. As a general rule, I cannot stand best player available, because if you ignore a need, you're begging to get fired.
Well, Steve, the opposite, the flip side of that is going into the draft saying we got to have a cornerback, and you end up with Vernon Hargraves. That ain't no bargain either, Steve.
All right. Well, hey, more draft talk is always available on the Best in Class podcast with Sean Sullivan, the JoeBucksFan.com draft guru. And, of course, you can find him at Bill Curry Ford. He's also the GM there, and he will help you personally, give you the Ira Kaufman Best in Class discount, BillCurryFord.com. And Big Storm Beer, load up on your Big Storm Beer. It's in Publix. Find where to get it near you at BigStormBrewery.com. Can't wait for my next Bromosa, maybe a Sunny Key Lime, Ira. And our thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration, FloridasElitereStoration.com. Ira, in all that time covering spring training, is it true that you had a wonderful night out, slightly romantic, with Marge Schott?
Oof. Steve, I have to think my taste is a little more refined. I have to, Steve. Now, Steve, I was 24. Am I looking at Marge Schott, Lee, as somebody I want to tango with at that time? Now, come on.
Well, she had money, so, I mean, you got to be a little open-minded there, but no, she's not Gracie Hunt. For our audience that's under 40, just FYI, Marge Schott, think Roseanne Barr.
Thank you, Lee. Thank you. And, Steve, at that time, and I don't want to freak people out on this podcast, my hair was jet black, and I had a beard. Picture the sage, jet black and a beard. I had it going. I had it going in 1979, not much before and not much since. But 79, Steve, I was rolling.
All right, Ira, look, last question. First, I want you to recap your three picks in dramatic fashion for Bucks fans. First, second, and third round. Recap those picks.
In the first round, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers select Washington cornerback Kyler Gordon. Yay! Go Bucks! In round two, the Tampa Bay Bucks select Minnesota edge rusher Boye Mafe. Yay! Go Bucks! In round three, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers select linebacker Brian Asamoah of Oklahoma. And Todd Bowles is a happy, happy man.
All right, Ira, last question for you and Lee. Last one for you and Lee. With Derek Carr signing an extension this week, now there are 7 quarterbacks in the NFL making $40 million a year or more, ranging all the way up to 50 to Aaron Rodgers. So I ask you this, Ira. Tom Brady's playing for $10 million this year, and we know the guy wants money. It doesn't mean he wants to break the bank and bankrupt his team, and a lot of people, a lot of fans like to say, oh, he doesn't care about the money. But let's be realistic. If he didn't care about money, he wouldn't have 5 companies and be doing all these things. He'd be a philanthropist. So, and that's not what he is. I'm not saying that he doesn't give to charity, but I mean, realistically, Brady's all about the money in many ways. You could make that argument. So my point here is, Ira, if the Bucks need to keep him, they're going to need to give him a good contract. Do you think behind the scenes they're saying, look, Tom, blank check. Well, what will you play for in 2023? We'll get the deal done now.
Steve, I can't believe I'm saying this. Lee, feel free to attack. I get the sense, just an instinct, just a feeling, Lee. I think the feeling at One Buck Place from ownership on down is that this is Brady's last year in Tampa. That's just a feeling I get. Lee, if he signed for 2023, I think he would have done it by now. He hasn't done it. I don't think he will do it. I think his next fortune will come as an NFL executive / part owner. I think that's where his mind is right now. He's looking at life beyond the playing field. Good for him. He might be very good at it. And I just think that's where his mind is. I can't readily dismiss these stories about the Dolphins. I think Ross wanted it to happen. Some credible people say this was going to happen. Didn't mean that Brady was going to play for the Dolphins, but he was going to be part of the Dolphins. And I don't see anything that tells me that's not going to happen next year. And I'm not sure the Bucs can do much about it, Lee. I think this is Brady's last year in Tampa. Tell me where I'm wrong.
You know, if Miami's floating apart ownership to him, I don't know what the Glazers could do to keep him outside of if they deal him in. And I don't know if they're willing to do that. That'd be the only way to keep Brady, I think. How could you compete against that? Brady's a businessman. First and foremost, I think he's a businessman away from the football field. And, you know, he started up a Hollywood production company, and that's a lot of dough right there. And so if he's got so much money coming in from other revenue sources, aside from his wife. So I don't know how you compete with an offer of a part ownership. To answer a question Steve had for you, Ira, unless I'm looking at it at a completely different prism, which very well could be possible, a wrong prism. If the Bucs are going to go all defense, which is what you're wanting, that to me sort of suggests they think he will return.
It depends how you want to look at it, Lee, because you can say, hey, Brady's coming back. We need more and more weapons. More and more weapons, more protection. You can look at it that way too, Lee.
Yeah, I was just thinking they think that he's going to come back. Well, then they're okay with offense, and they don't need to entice him any further.
Well, the way I look at it, Lee, life beyond Brady, you're not going to average 30 points unless you come up with some crazy quarterback scenario, which, you know, you never know. There could be some veterans available next March, ooh, and the Bucs have the weapons and the wherewithal to entice somebody. They do. Scratch Derek Carr from that list, Lee.
Yeah.
He was one. You know, he's one of those guys that's been floated as a potential Brady replacement. He has been. Steve, you know, what strikes me is the way you laid it out with the money, with $40 million here and $35 million here and Prescott here and Mahomes here, and Lamar Jackson's going to make that coming up soon when he finally signs an extension. And Lee, Steve Isbitt says Tom Brady, $10 million. I mean, that is such an unbelievable advantage for this franchise. It's just beyond comprehension.
Oh, of course. I got to ask you this, Ira. And I said this the previous podcast toward the end. Whenever we're talking future quarterbacks, you know there are thousands of Bucs fans screaming the following question. And I want you to address this. What about Kyle Trask?
Well, my only knock on Kyle Trask is the one you keep mentioning. He's never thrown an NFL pass. So you can read into what you want. Lee, if he's not the backup this year and he's not dressing on Sundays, I got a problem.
You hit the ball out of the park with that statement. If he's not dressing on Sundays, there's a problem. And that problem is either Trask or the Bucs' problem and their research on Trask.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my problem or yours. It's Jason Light's problem at that point, you know, because you don't want to look at the Glazers and say, oops, I made a second-round mistake. It's not his first time rodeo making a second-round mistake. Now he has drafted well in the last 4 years. He has, for the most part. But you don't want to make a mistake on Kyle Trask. And I'm not saying they have. But, Lee, can I see the guy? Can I see him in training camp? Can I see him as the backup? Can I see him in mop-up duty? I got to know a little bit more about him, Lee, by the end of the season.
Well, the crazy thing is, Ira, is that you're probably not going to see him. And, of course, every Bucs fan is hoping and praying that you don't see him because, Tom Brady's the quarterback. And if things go well, then there's a great chance that Trask would be coming up next year with a brand new offensive coordinator, which is often a disaster for a quarterback who's never played before. So the whole thing is interesting, but again, he hasn't played, so he may be the next superstar. He may not be. The Bucs are acting like he's not. We'll see, Sage. Final thoughts, Ira, as we march toward the draft. You want fans looking at things, not looking at things. Anything you want them to stay away from. The smoke is going to get thicker. And I'll say this, former Bills GM Doug Whatley was on SiriusXM NFL radio talking about how, hey, those 30 visits, a lot of them are about guys that you're not going to draft, but you want to get to know them as potential future free agents 4 years down the road. He said the Bills used to at least bring in two guys minimum every year just to throw off other teams, guys they didn't like. And so there's a lot of smoke and misdirection out there.
I don't claim to be a draft guru. I gave you my top three picks for the Bucs that I think could be available at their slots. But you know who is, Lee? You know who puts the time in? Who puts the effort in? Sean Sullivan. Of course, Jason Light gets paid to do it, and Sean Sullivan doesn't get paid to do it. He gets paid to oversee the operation at BillCurryFord.com and does a sensational job. But in his second career, of which I think he's got some claim to be a scout, if he so wanted to be, this guy knows what a football player looks like. Lee, he's the guy that said Joe Tryon. He could have said, 100 names at that spot. He picked Joe Tryon. He got it right. Not like some of these other clowns who throw 7 or 8 names out there, and then if one of them hits, said, as I predicted, picked the guy, he picked one guy, Lee, one. And he didn't hedge his bets and said, this is who I think they should pick, and this is who I think they will pick. So, Steve, what I'm saying is we're going to do an upcoming podcast with Sean Sullivan. It's going to be very draft-centric, and I think every Buck fan should be keenly interested in what Sean has to say.
All right, Sage, get out of here. Good luck with all the weird things that happen at your home. If people only knew how many times we paused this podcast for strange disasters at your property, Ira, they'd be floored.